Did you know that the last time you could catch a train in Colorado Springs was over 50 years ago, 1971?
Unless you're a vagabond, and then you could catch the freight trains.
That's true. Well, someone's working hard to try to change that, and we'll find out all about that.
On Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest in Manitou and Colorado Springs.
This is Peak Community, Studio 809 Podcast.
We recorded this episode several weeks ago, on May 12th. The conversation is even more relevant today. But I do have an update. The Front Range Passenger Rail District recently released their draft delivery plan for Colorado Connector, offering significant detail about their plan to begin passenger rail service between Denver and Fort Collins in 2029, and extending that service to Colorado Springs and Pueblo by 2032. See this episode's show notes for a link to that plan, as well as a link to provide feedback. The window for public input on the draft plan closes July 27th. And I want to remind you about the upcoming event, United We Rock, on August 1st at Rock Ledge Ranch. Catch live music, local food, artist vendors, beer and whiskey tastings, and interactive historical experiences from 2 to 8 p.m. Carrie and her band will be among the musical performances. We'll put a link to more information in the show notes. We recorded, as we usually do, in our community podcast studio at The Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs.
I'm Al Brody.
I'm Dave Gardner.
And I'm Carrie Simison.
I'm pretty excited about this episode because we've got a special guest who came from out of town, not just to talk to us, but made a special stop. So Sal Pace, General Manager of Front Range Passenger Rail District, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's awesome to be here.
You've been making the rounds already this morning, Sal.
I was at the Downtown Partnership at 8 a.m., and then tonight I'm wrapping up in Longmont at City Council there, and then head back to Pueblo tonight.
Awesome. Thanks for making a stop at the studio.
Yeah.
You could use a train that runs up and down the Front Range.
Yeah, I know.
So how long in Pueblo?
Since 2003. So 23 years.
And I guess Pueblo's kind of a cool train-oriented place. Practically, the town's a train museum.
Yeah. Pueblo has a long history with rail. So the steel mill produces more steel rail than any other rail facility in North America. And the top two testing rail facilities in the world are actually in Pueblo. They're competitors.
So tell us a little bit about Front Range Passenger Rail District. How long has it been around? How did it come about?
So in 2021, I actually drafted the legislation to create the Front Range Passenger Rail District, usually not part of my speaking tour. And it was the successor to what was previously the Southwest Chief and Front Range Passenger Rail Commission, which was the successor to the Southwest Chief Commission. And what feels like a couple lifetimes ago, I was a county commissioner in Pueblo. And at that time, the Southwest Chief route, which is a long-distance route from Chicago to Los Angeles, was at risk of being discontinued from Amtrak. And it goes through southeastern Colorado, Lamar, La Junta, and Trinidad. And we were told unless we could find $200 million for capital improvements that the route was going to be discontinued. So somehow I decided I was going to save the train along with other folks, but I took a lead with local governments in Colorado and New Mexico and Kansas. We actually were fighting against Colorado Department of Transportation at the time, and we raised the money to save the train, and we created this commission in state law, which a commission is like a club. It doesn't actually have any powers. And then as our commission was sunsetting, we said, let's think about what we want to do after we save this rural American train. And so we changed it to, let's start working on delivering Front Range rail so rural Colorado can connect to the rest of the state. And as that commission was wrapping up, we said, let's create a special district. So this is a Title 32 special district. like a lot of other special districts. The Fountain Creek Watershed District, I created that district when I was in the legislature. And it means you have a constituency, you have boundaries, you have a mission, you have a purpose, you have the ability to refer a tax question. So we created the Front Range Passenger Rail District with the purpose of creating service from state line to state line along the Front Range.
Having rail service is more than just a kind of a cool thing, a curiosity, right? Can you educate us about that?
We are doing it uniquely in Colorado versus other states and past attempts at rail service, where we are contracting directly with the freight railroads. And we've taken a uniquely Colorado approach. I'm not exactly sure what you were trying to get at with your question, but I'm going to answer the question that I think is a cool question.
Okay, but I'll make you answer mine eventually.
Okay. And so last week, we actually signed a term sheet with the BNSF Railway. It's interesting. It used to be called the Burlington Northern and Santa Fe. Their legal name is now BNSF. And along with RTD and the state of Colorado, and this is a unique approach where instead of contracting service with Amtrak and using what's called 209 powers under the Surface Transportation Act to force your way onto freight tracks, which has been contentious to the freight industry, they don't like that. We contracted directly with the freight industry, and they gave us a hell of a bargain, about a third of the price of what had been previously modeled for the same service. They are the contractor and our partner on this, and then they're going to go contract with Amtrak for the service. Amtrak didn't like this because I think maybe it could be a new precedent, but what it means is we're going to be quicker to delivery at a lower cost with the freight industry as a business partner with the state. And it means we have a signed term sheet, and we're going to have service, not in Colorado Springs, but our first service for Colorado Connector will be up and running by 2029.
Yeah, that's pretty quick. So I just always assumed that we were going to have to wait while a bunch of track was laid.
Yeah, so we did model out, we did 4 years of planning on this, and including with the freight railroads at the table, and we modeled out three different delivery options. One was to lay new tracks sort of east of I-25. One was to use CDOT right-of-way along I-25. Ultimately, what we settled on, the most affordable and the quickest to delivery, is using the freight consolidated main lines. That's Union Pacific. They are not the UP yet. They're still called Union Pacific and BNSF Railway. And it actually modeled out as the highest ridership as well.
There used to be, I don't know how many there are now that we don't have a coal plant, 24 trains a day on those tracks that were freight.
Yeah.
So you have to put the passenger rail in between those 24 trains or however many there are. And my experience on
hopefully fewer and fewer. Coal trains.
Hopefully.
In about 3 years.
So my experience on Amtrak is that freight gets priority and you sit in the train and wait until they pass by. How do you deal with that when you have a scheduled passenger rail?
I can say here in southern Colorado, we're down to 16 total freight trains a day.
Okay.
The numbers are decreasing. And in the north, it's even lower. That's part of the private freight industry's interest in partnering with us. It's a new business model. So in the term sheet that we signed with BNSF, again, not a term sheet we signed with Amtrak. It's reversing things and doing it uniquely Colorado or uniquely Colorado model. They are heavily incentivized to provide on-time performance as our business partner. And that's a huge part of the operating fees that they're paying is on-time performance. Now, what we've agreed to make service work is to not affect freight traffic and not to slow down passenger traffic. So what does that mean? That means that we have already modeled out with the freight industry laying new track in some areas on their right-of-way. A couple examples in southern Colorado, in downtown Colorado Springs. We're down to one track in a couple areas, and we're going to lay a second track along the Air Force Academy and up to Monument Hill. On both sides of Monument Hill, the freight traffic starts to go pretty slow, so we're going to lay a second track on Monument Hill. And then also, we're putting in what's called sidings in the railroad world, but those are really passing lanes and several sidings. And with the promise in the term sheet that the freight traffic goes to the siding first. The other thing we're doing is we are putting in positive train control and new safety measures to prevent crashes, wrecks, spills, etc. It's the best technology for safety. And so even with the freight trains going off on sidings that we pay for and we get the priority as the passengers, they're still going to have faster freight service because we're improving the speed of the tracks from freight level speed to passenger level speeds.
Okay, so back to the question that you dodged.
I just didn't even understand it.
Well, so we've had trains for a couple hundred years, right? Why are we interested in trains now? What are they going to do for us? Why do we need trains now?
All over the world, people use trains. If you travel to Europe or Asia or even Africa, it puts the United States to shame. And anyone who spent time on really either coast, but really the Northeast Corridor is the strongest for passenger service in the United States. Trains are a great option, an alternative to driving. And in Colorado, it's probably more needed than even in the Northeast Corridor or in other parts of the country because we don't have other options to I-25 going north and south. A tractor trailer has a spill on I-25 and it's going to shut down traffic regardless of what type of vehicle you're in for hours.
Yeah.
The congestion is terrible. And as we've laid new lanes, it hasn't gotten better.
Imagine that.
And the air quality continues to go down in Colorado, and the cost to travel and the cost of time. Actually, right now, according to the Urban Mobility Report, the average Colorado Springs resident spends 61 hours annually in a traffic jam. And that's not moving. That's just being in a traffic jam separate from your regular commute. That's more than a full work week of work lost just sitting in your car in a traffic jam every single year and riding on the Colorado Connector from Colorado Springs to Denver or from Colorado Springs to the Pueblo Chili Fest means that you don't have to sit in that traffic, and it's going to be a more affordable and more comfortable ride.
And a lot more fun. There are more things to do.
Absolutely. And we're working on an agreement with the Broncos and the city of Denver to make sure we have a stop at the new Denver Broncos Stadium, which is at an old Union Pacific rail yard. And so the Consolidated Main Line goes right adjacent to it. We'll be able to stop off and be in the stadium in 2 minutes.
Yeah, so that could be big.
Mm-hmm. Ride your bike to the station here in downtown Colorado Springs and never have to get in a car.
So I'm not sure if it's too early for this question, but what type of ticket prices would the average person look for Springs to Denver, Springs to Pueblo?
Okay, so we've modeled out in our delivery plan 19 cents per mile. So that means Colorado Springs to Denver is in the range of like $12 or $13.
You can't even drive for that right now.
No.
Wow.
And actually, we know that people want this service and they'll use it. The ski train is already up and running during the winters. Mm-hmm. And when we increased capacity, it increased ridership too. So the ski train was sold out 80% of the time.
Wow.
When it was just a weekend train. And when we went from just weekends to daily service, it continued to be sold out 80% of the time. And those tickets start at $9 a ticket.
Is there market pricing or demand pricing?
Yeah, we'll do that probably for the special event trains. If someone's going to go drop $150 for a Broncos ticket, the number one goal is to make sure we're not pricing anyone out of a ticket. And we want to make it affordable to everyone. But we also have operating costs, and we would like to recoup some of the dollars for operating costs. So if we're doing special event stops for special events that cost hundreds of dollars, then those high-end spenders who are using a special event train are going to help subsidize regular riders so that we can keep the fares low for everybody.
Now, you used that word subsidize, so that's a good segue to, I think, an important question. I can't imagine that there's any notion that this can be self-sustaining. It's going to need ongoing subsidies, right, to run.
Damn it, I wish I didn't use that word. I've been working on this, you may have guessed, for 15 years or so, and I was speaking before a bunch of road and bridge contractors somehow, like 2 or 3 years ago. I don't know how I was in that audience. And someone said, how's it going to pay for itself? And I said, how does I-25 pay for itself? And it's a matter of perspective. Do you see public transportation as a public good, or do you see it as a business model? If passenger rail were profitable, you'd see passenger rail companies all over the country.
Yeah.
You'd see Elon Musk running passenger rail companies. Passenger rail is a transportation option. It is a public good, just as I-25 is. And
I-25 is public bad.
Yeah, there you go. And you know the story, GM 60 years ago went and bought a bunch of private trolley companies and pulled up the tracks. And when they ultimately lost a fair market lawsuit, 50 years later, the fine was like $1 million. But by that time, they'd already destroyed public transit all over the country.
Yeah. Forgotten about that. Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't raise that as an objection, but I just...
Oh, I know.
Yeah. But I figured it's good to know. Now, you're a Pueblo guy. So... how come Pueblo and Colorado Springs, let's talk about the timeline. We're going to have to wait. We're not going to see passenger rail service in a couple of years here.
So the model is we will have service up to all of the stations within 5.5 years of passing a ballot measure.
Wow.
And so that'll be middle of 2032. It's a virtue of the first phase being paid for largely by RTD. RTD is covering a good chunk of phase one from Denver to Fort Collins because they have this unfulfilled promise of trains up to Boulder that they never delivered on. So we hatched this idea. It was actually in the enabling legislation for Front Range Passenger Rail in 2021 that proposed that we could share service with RTD up to the Northwest Corridor because it was the biggest political albatross around our neck. And with RTD putting in those dollars to help get phase one going, we don't need to use any new tax dollars for that. Phase two, which will be a tax in the entire district, including Fort Collins and Boulder and Denver, will be to bring service to Colorado Springs and Pueblo. And so legitimately, we can say that Northern Colorado taxpayers are delivering the service to Southern Colorado. And we thought it was really important as we put together the phasing. Mm-hmm. And I just spent a bunch of time on a call about moving around dollars and phases and projects. It's a hard part that we're trying to finalize right now in the next few weeks. Our top priority is to make sure every station has service before we enhance service anywhere else in phase three.
So this will be a partial state tax, sales tax?
We are a special district.
Okay. Where the train runs is the special district.
When we wrote the legislation in 2021, we included all the federally defined metropolitan areas as well as 5 miles around I-25 radius. I didn't know how much the clerks would hate that because 5 miles sometimes is in the middle of someone's property.
Yeah.
And hopefully by this time already, I haven't seen a text yet, the legislature ends tomorrow. We have a bill that has redrawn our district boundaries. So it's just like you can redraw congressional boundaries in Texas mm-hmm. and elsewhere. We're doing that for our district because when we created the district in 21, we did not know the route alignment. We were still studying the three route alignments. We know the route alignment. So the new district boundaries are not contiguous. They're based on station locations because we believe that the communities near the stations are the ones who will use it the most and get the greatest use out of it. So the new district boundaries will be whole municipalities. Another request of the clerks, and legislators care what clerks have to say because they count the ballots, and not based on any radius or anything like that, so we don't have to create a whole bunch of new ballot styles for the clerks. Whole municipalities that are within 5 miles of a station, at least 20% of the municipality is within 5 miles of a station. That means in El Paso County, Manitou, and Colorado Springs.
Lower Arkansas Valley farmers, they won't be in the district?
No.
And neither will Castle Rock.
Neither will Castle Rock, so... Huh.
Even though if they run fast, they can catch the train.
They're going to catch it noise-wise coming and going.
Castle Rock will not be in the district. They're very happy about it.
I've heard.
And instead, we have modeled out a wonderful community for Douglas County, and that's Sterling Ranch. It is a fast-growing development off of Highway 85. It is a metro district, but they're going to get up to about 75,000 residents here in the next 10 years or so. And they're along the consolidated main line. It works out. And they're excited to be in the district. There's also a large military contractor right there. And they're also building a large sports facility. That will be the Douglas County stop. And everyone in Douglas County seems to be happy about that.
So we had a roads and bridges tax to help bring the maintenance back up, called 2C. Thank you. And it was a 0.1% sales tax, which passed. People appreciated that, but it wasn't without a fight.
Yep.
And if you're taxing all of Colorado Springs, which much of Colorado Springs is 15 miles away from where we're sitting right now.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to be really excited about this as taxpayers. So how much is the tax that they will pay?
First, on the Colorado Springs piece, we've had two very robust discussions with the Air Force Academy. And a little bit of our timing is off because they're changing superintendents. I think we could have reached an agreement with the previous superintendent if conversations were timed a little better to have a station at the Air Force Academy. We are still talking with them about the potential for a special event stop at the Air Force Academy. Obviously, from a planning perspective, having something in Northern Colorado Springs would be a huge benefit. There's that new private development on the Air Force Academy with the museum and hotel there. Mm-hmm. That private developer is really interested, and we do have to lay another track there. So could we lay that track in a way that works with that private developer to potentially have a special event stop there? We won't be able to button that up by this November.
That's an interesting thing because the hotel and the visitor center are on the academy property, but outside the perimeter fence.
Yep.
The rail
enters
the perimeter fence and goes through the academy. And as a cyclist, we know that right now you cannot go through the academy on the trail because of security concerns. So what happens if the academy says, can't bring the passenger rail through? They've always let freight go through.
Yeah, I don't think they'll have the right to do that because we're leasing from the...
That's how I feel about the trail. But
The difference is the freight industry is one of the most protected industries under federal law, and we're leasing from the freight industry. It's their property.
Interesting.
Now, we've had serious conversations with them about security and otherwise and best practices. There have been other passenger rail lines that have gone through military installations around the country. So this is something that experts in this field have studied a lot. I am not that expert. I'm the guy running the district, but we have the right contractors considering this on. Now, as to your question about the tax, we've been modeling out lots of different scenarios and options for getting this built. This is not a guarantee, but at this point, what we're looking at is a 0.33, which equates out to, on a $10 purchase, a little more than 3 pennies on a sales tax. A third of the 2C. What that models out to across the district is about $260 million annually in revenue. You look at the new lane on I-25 and the gap. I mean, that was over $1 billion there. And you still...
Most people can't use it.
And you still have to pay for it. You're talking about subsidies. In order to deliver service, and this is really important to me and to our district, deliver service to every station within 5.5 years, that's the tax rate we're going to need.
So when will voters in El Paso County be voting on this probably?
The board has the ability to refer a ballot measure. We have till about mid-August to finalize that if we're going to do it. And if we do it, then we could be voting on the November ballot. Mm-hmm. We've done some polling, and the polling looks positive. Yeah. And even a majority of Colorado Springs residents are saying that they like this.
Doug Bruce is one of our neighbors here in Colorado Springs, and he taught us that sunset is a beautiful thing. So... will there be a sunset to this tax?
No, there's not going to be a sunset. And there's two reasons. One is we're going to have continuing operating costs, and that's going to be in perpetuity. And then secondly, ultimately, the goal is to connect to Wyoming and New Mexico. New Mexico just released their long-term rail plan, and they wrote extensively about their hope and desires in New Mexico to connect to the Colorado Connector. And actually, New Mexico's leaps and bounds ahead of Colorado on rail. Bill Richardson, when he was governor, he said he wanted service from Albuquerque to Santa Fe. He did it in 3 years. They just went and bought the freight line, and they put the rail runner between those two cities. Mm-hmm. And even a train that in a much smaller state. They have 3 congressional districts. We have 8. Give you an idea of the difference in size. Much smaller state. You can really see the economic engine around the stations, and it's been a real boon for Santa Fe, for instance. They also own all the track south of Raton Pass, New Mexico does. And so once you hit Trinidad in Colorado, we don't have to negotiate with any freight railroad. It's just New Mexico. We could easily have a Cheyenne to Albuquerque express train within 20 years.
Wow. Listen, I had to promise that we would let Sal out of here in 30 seconds.
Oh, geez.
So unless you have been given a reprieve.
Let me see when my next meeting is here. I think my noon interview canceled. Then I need to be in Denver at 1. I probably should leave, huh?
Probably about 2 hours
you
ago.
Take an I-25. You should have left already.
Yeah, we probably should let you go.
We can't let you go without one last question.
I don't think we have time.
No?
Let's do one more.
One last question.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm not good at following rules.
We always ask, not that you're local, but what do you love about Colorado Springs?
I do love Colorado Springs.
But what is it that you love about Colorado Springs?
I love the access to the mountains, hiking trails. The parks are wonderful. I think the downtown has had a really nice revitalization, and the rail station is going to be downtown too. It's going to be next to the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Museum, and I think the stadium down there and closing down the power plant and the museum is all great, and we're just going to add to that with this rail station. So there's a lot I love about Colorado Springs.
I was going to say, yeah, nothing at all that you like about Colorado Springs.
This has been great. Railroad tycoon. Railroad tycoon, Sal Pace, thanks for joining us. We'd love to see a lot less people on the highway and a lot more people on trains. So thanks for the work you're doing.
Yeah, yes. Thanks all of you guys.
Thank you.
We'll call for an update.
Sounds good. Yeah, bring me back. You guys are fine.
In the studio with us now is Hala Ershadi, managing editor of our favorite hyper-local, independent publication, the Pikes Peak Bulletin. Thanks for the work you do, and thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I wanted to continue talking about the coverage that the Bulletin has done around federal immigration enforcement in Colorado Springs and the surrounding area. Sometimes when you're reporting, one story leads to another, and that's very much how it has happened with my reporting around ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is typically the agency that acts on to do immigration enforcement in the interior of the United States. And I, some weeks ago, covered, or actually some months ago, covered a story about Mel Flores, who's a local Army veteran. He's in his mid-30s. And he was facing 3 misdemeanor charges for allegedly obstructing ICE. And the narrative was pretty much the same on both sides. He did identify some ICE agents when he was called to the scene of suspected ICE activity through the Colorado Rapid Response Network. He's a volunteer confirmer for that organization. They go out, they make sure that, see if it is in fact ICE. If someone calls their hotline, they'll dispatch confirmers who go out there and can say, okay, this is ICE, or maybe this isn't ICE. And also let people who are involved know what their rights are, document the incident, do some follow-up with the people affected afterwards. Mel saw some agents, honked his car, followed them honking, saying, this is ICE, everybody. This is ICE right here. And they left the scene. He followed them for a while. They accused him of driving recklessly. He disputed that. Anyway, those charges were dropped as part of a plea in a separate agreement that Mel got for obstructing traffic by walking in a road during a protest, which was after the killings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy back in January. There were nationwide protests, including this one in Colorado Springs that Mel was part of. So as I was talking to Mel about the charges being dropped in his previous case, I learned about his activity with Migra Watch. And Migra, M-I-G-R-A, is Spanish slang for immigration enforcement. So there's corn that comes in, that's Colorado Rapid Response Network. They'll come in, they'll document, they'll let people know what their rights are. And then what happens next? Well, that's where Migra Watch steps in, because the people that are affected, they're often afraid. They're not sure what happens next. They offer community support. So some weeks ago, I went to the Chinook Center, which is in a strip mall off of Airport Road. And I met a woman who, she was, you know, I think I described her in the article, like, picture a recently retired grandma dressed to take her kids to the park. Not what you think of, like, sometimes activists get painted a certain way. And this is not that. So we rode together and delivered groceries because in Trump's America, there are people who are not criminals who are afraid to leave their homes. They don't even want to go to King Soopers to get dinner because they don't know if they might end the day in a detention center where they may or may not have access to an attorney. They may or may not have medical care. They may or may not have edible food. These are all credible concerns documented with ICE detention centers, which are often run in private prisons and all of the issues that come with private incarceration. So we delivered groceries. We talked about why she does that work. And in the course of that conversation, she mentioned a job fair. So this volunteer with Migra Watch said, yeah, we're planning a protest at a job fair for ICE that is going to happen at the DoubleTree Hotel in a few weeks. I thought, oh, I'll go there and see what all that's about. And you know, I wanted to cover the protest, but I also was immediately interested in, like, I wonder who's going to be applying for these jobs. And I wonder if they'll talk with me and kind of tell me their perspectives on what's happening with federal immigration in the country. And I'd really like to hear from them. And maybe even some of the agents themselves that are there will talk with me. So a little over a week ago, I went to the DoubleTree, and there wasn't anybody protesting at the time that I got there. So I went inside and walked into the event room that was set up, had like metal detectors, like you'd walk through at an airport or, you know, public building, courthouse, and identified myself as press. And that definitely changed the mood in the room. They got, you know, visibly nervous. They had me like stand in a corner, and
they didn't offer you milk and cookies.
They didn't. So I tried to look, you know, extra nice, which I'm not a super like intimidating person. I think I look like what I am, which is a middle-aged mom, right? Who like generally means well in the world. But I did try to take a picture because I am also a reporter and we take pictures. And I was told, hey, don't do that. But I looked around and there weren't any applicants at the time that I got there. There were some people with Border Patrol uniforms. There was some private security there. Some of the Border Patrol people had guns. Some didn't. So I waited there, and then a woman came up to me, and, you know, something that struck me a lot was that I could just see in her eyes, like, her wondering, was I there for good intentions, right? Like, was this a gotcha thing, you know? I could just, like, see her really scoping me out, like, what are you about? And, you know, that's not from anything that they were doing or I were doing. That's the national context that we're all living in, where it's tense.
Yeah.
It's very polarized. And she told me that no one there was authorized to speak to the press, but they would send me a press release. They got my email. I didn't get the press release, but that's okay. I found it online later. And then a friend of mine, Seth, who was also a freelancer for the Bulletin, came to join me, because just anytime there's a lot of tensions and people with guns, it's just good to have a buddy. And then Seth said, well, why don't we go look around? Because the job fair kind of went down the line of event rooms. So there was, like, different things in different rooms. So we went down. Their double doors are wide open to this room that has these tables with TVs and poster boards talking about, you know, what you can do with the Border Patrol. So we went in there, and this very friendly man came up in a Border Patrol uniform, was talking to us, and was like, you know, if you're former military, the age restrictions can be overlooked. Thank you for thinking I might be a veteran. I'm not. But I am of a certain age, you're correct. And then another man came up who was armed and considerably less friendly, and asked us how we got in there. And we were like, oh, we walked in the doors that are wide open, and there's no sign saying don't do that. And he kind of grilled us a little bit about, like, why were you in there? How did you get in there? And we're like, there's literally no sign saying not to do that. Like, if there had been a sign, we would have respected it. It looked open to the public. And he also was trying to tell us there was a sign down at the other end. And I was like, oh, I guess I didn't see it. But I went back and looked, and, like, no, there was not a sign saying to not go in there. And then as we were walking away, a gentleman in a cowboy hat and sort of, like, Western formal wear, like, looked like, I told him, I was like, you look like you just walked off the set of Yellowstone. And I mean that in a good way. Was like, that was really funny. That was so funny when you told him, like, they should have had a sign, you know, like, funny on them. And so Seth and I were talking with this gentleman, Christopher Mitchell, who, as it turns out,
oh, I know that name.
As it turns out, is a third party candidate for Congressional District 5.
Did he have his shirt on?
He did not. I didn't realize who he was at first. We'd actually chatted for a while because he was also there to see if there was maybe a good job fit for him with Border Patrol. And we had a really good conversation. I know he's been in the studio before, and I haven't had a chance to listen to that interview, but I certainly will. We talked with him about why he was interested in Border Patrol, which he said, you know, he wants to stop crime, right? Like, he wants to do a good thing. And we also talked about why does he feel like people come over, and he talked about growing up near the border and seeing people literally jump a fence and run across a highway. And he said, you know, I don't think those people were here to do harm. I think they were here for economic opportunity. And so we had a discussion about, well, if you work for Border Patrol, you don't really get to choose the enforcement of whether you're catching dangerous people smuggling fentanyl or these other people who are, as you've said, coming over because they need economic opportunity. And he said, yeah, he was aware of that. We talked about, since he's a constitutionalist, I asked him about the concerns that some people have raised about federal immigration and constitutional rights, including, you know, unreasonable search and seizure, the detention practices. And he was very candid, and I felt refreshingly humble, and would say, like, you know, I really need to learn more about that. But it was very interesting to talk with him and understand where he was coming from. I asked him about the killings of Alex Preddy and Renee Good, and he's like, well, you know, I'm sorry that that happened, but you really can't interfere with law enforcement. And I said, where do you get your news? And he said, Fox News. And I said, you know, there's some really good reporting by the BBC where they do like a frame by frame, and maybe you want to check that out too and get a different perspective. And he said, sure. And that conversation really drove home to me that it is actually possible to have a civil conversation about things which maybe one or both sides doesn't have all the information, has different perspectives with the information that they do have. And if you're coming to it with good faith, it can be an enlightening, illuminating talk. I felt like it was that for all of us.
That's pretty cool. And so if you're interested in that interview when Christopher Mitchell was in the studio, look through our Making Democracy Now podcast for that. So thank you, Hala. Where do people go so that they can keep following what you're doing?
Yeah, please check out PikesPeakBulletin.org. We're also on all, not all of the socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. We are not on X, not on TikTok yet, but we might be in the near future. Yes, please follow us, share our stories, get the word out. A lot of these stories are not in other outlets. Please share with your networks.
Hi, I'm Dave Gardner, Chief Podcast Wrangler at Studio 809 Podcasts. We're a collective of podcasters here in the Pikes Peak region committed to having local residents who are better informed and more engaged. You know, most of us volunteer our time. Nobody's really earning any wages working on these podcasts. This is a gift to the community. And one way you can say thank you is to become a patron, providing a little support to help us cover our expenses. You can easily do that by heading over to studio809podcasts.com and clicking on the patron button in the upper right corner. Thanks so much for supporting community.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.